Good morning. I'm just going to show some pretty pictures for the first few minutes while people arrive. So, I use Mario Brothers as an analogy in my talk, and I had to find freely licensed artwork. So people's cupcakes, I feel, is transformative enough that I can show it in my talk without being sued by Nintendo. So these are pretty cute. I like them. I like the chomping flower. I don't know what that's called, but let's see. What's the next one? So these are cool because they're pixelated, and also Sonic is in them. So I think they're super cute. And there's like one Mario right in the corner. Or is that his brother? I don't know which is which. I only played it like 3 times. So, and is that I think there's a Space Invader at the bottom left. All right, and then I've got one more photo. So this has the full cast, I think, including a Goomba up there in the top, the big teeth. All right, I will get started pretty soon here. Okay, good morning. Wow, nobody ever does that in America. So I'm Valerie Aurora. I'm the executive director and co-founder of the ADA Initiative. I'm here to talk about why conferences matter using examples from Linux file systems. So, wait, 1 second. Let me fix my notes. Come on. Turn off mirroring. Okay. It's great that LibreOffice has this feature now where you have your notes on this screen. So, yay, free software. All right. Although those of you who were here early saw it crash. So, boo, free software. Okay. The ADA Initiative is a nonprofit dedicated to supporting women in open technology and culture, which includes free software like Linux and free data like Wikipedia. And here are some of the women who are part of the ADA Initiative. So I am also a Linux file systems consultant with a really bad website. So, but I'm not a web developer, so that's okay. So I have 3 passions in life: file systems, conferences, and women in free software and culture. I'm going to talk about all 3 of these in this talk, so I'm excited to be here. You're probably wondering how I'm going to do that, but we'll see. So I want to give a trigger warning for people who might be upset by talking about some things. It's totally reasonable. This talk contains references to sexual harassment and assault, but no graphic descriptions. It's totally okay if that's not what you want to hear at 11 a.m. in the morning, and you can leave. That's cool. So, all right. So, here's what I'm going to talk about in this talk. First, me, so that you know that I actually know what I'm talking about and maybe could be right, possibly. So then I'm going to talk about some of the history of Linux file systems development and how that shows how conferences helped Linux file systems development. I'll talk about why so few women attend conferences relative to free software conferences relative to men, and how to attract more women to conferences, and why that matters for free software in general. If we have time, I'll talk about the ADA Initiative after that. Okay, me. So I've been writing free software since 1998. That's when I wrote my first Linux kernel code. In 2000, I got my first Linux kernel patch accepted into the mainstream Linux kernel. I threw a party with beach balls and drinking. It was great. The In 2002, I was the developer number five, the fifth person to write code for the ZFS file system for Solaris, which at the time was closed source, but it's now open source. Hooray! After that, I did a lot of work in Linux file systems, a lot of prototypes and new features, and even got a patent, which is licensed for all GPL use from Red Hat. The thing I'm most proud of is called Relative Atime. It's a file systems feature that saves on I/O and power by updating the file access time only if it is later than the file system or the file modification time. Basically, what this means is applications won't break if you turn this on, but you'll save a lot of power and I/O, unlike the no access time option. So this is now on by default, and if you have a Linux laptop, you can run this command, and you'll probably see that output. So I've gone to over 100 conferences. This is a picture of all my conference badges that I had saved in 2010. I've spoken or been on the program committee at dozens of conferences, and I co-founded three conferences: Linux Plumbers Conference, the Linux File Systems Workshop, and Ada Camp, which is an unconference for women in open technology and culture. So this is my involvement in women in free software and culture. I joined Linux Chicks in 2002 when I realized that I was the only active woman kernel developer, which was just like horrifying. I couldn't ignore that. Like, what? There's something wrong. In 2009, I joined the Geek Feminism blog and wiki, which is about feminism and geek culture in general, with a heavy emphasis on free software. And in 2011, I co-founded the Ada Initiative, and it's now my full-time job ever since then to work on women in free software and culture. So how in the world am I going to talk about all three of these things? Well, I have to start with some background first. So in 2002, surprise! In 2002, I was started working on ZFS, which was the coolest, awesomest, newest Unix file system. It was copy on write, it had checksums, it had pooled storage. It was just, you know, the coolest thing ever. And when I came back to Linux in 2004, this is what we had. We had ext2, which was written in 1993. And it's basically the Berkeley Fast file system, which is like the second file system ever written. So it's really old. It's terrible. ext3 was ext2 with just a journal kind of tacked on top. So it was basically, you know, 1993 technology still. And XFS was pretty good in 1993. It had extents and B-trees, but it didn't have pooled storage, it didn't have checksums, all that stuff. So I was kind of like, oh, how embarrassing. So I got tired of waiting for, for waiting for Linux file systems to get better by themselves. I wanted to know, how can we get Linux file systems moving again? You know, kind of like, we're kind of like Mario without the power up. And I was just like, well, how do we get our power up in Linux file systems? So I remembered in ZFS that whenever we got together in person, we made a lot of progress. Half of us lived in California, the other half lived in Colorado. We would fly out to meet each other, and every time we did that, we checked in more code, we solved more problems. So, as you know, Linux development and free software development usually happens online, and it's just hard to do things online, some things. So the other thing that really helped was we went to conferences, a place where you can talk to each other in person, and that was a very important thing. One of the examples of how conferences helped ZFS is I went to the world's biggest file systems conference in 2003 and saw a paper on this cool thing called the adaptive replacement cache. It was this new caching algorithm that was better than all the other ones, very easy to do, and it was licensed for free use by anyone, by IBM. IBM was way into free software at that time already. So we use that in ZFS, and today ZFS has the adaptive replacement cache. So I decided to create a Linux file systems workshop. I co-founded this with a couple of people. The first one was in Portland. Those are all trees, lots and lots of trees in Portland. It was very small. We only had 14 people, 14 very carefully picked people. and it was a huge success, even with just 14 people. 2 weeks after the first conference, EXT4 was finally announced. It had been like this desultory, like, maybe we will write a patch this month, I don't know. And then having the file systems workshop really got us into gear. So it was a power up for Linux file systems. The next workshop was even more successful. ButterFS was announced a couple of months after it. ButterFS is very cool. It's copy on write, it has checksums, it's B-trees. I mean, it's a pretty great file system. And you can see Chris, this is Chris Mason's email to the mailing list saying, at the last file system summit, that's where I got the idea for this file system. Thank you to these people I was talking to, Zach Brown and Dave Chinner at the summit. So again, file systems workshop is working. That's our mushrooms. So a specific example of how conferences helped is ButterFS is based on this paper that was presented at the Linux File Systems Workshop in 2007. It showed how to do copy on write B-trees, which turns out to be pretty hard, but a researcher, again from IBM, had figured out how to do it and said, here, you can use this. And that's exactly what Chris Mason used in ButterFS. So yes, one more. So this is what Linux file systems look like in 2006, and this is what they look like in 2006 after the workshop, and this is what it looked like in 2007. So things got way better. This worked. Yes, Linux file systems is flying now. I want to say mushroom graffiti is from about a block from my hotel here in Porto Alegre. So I thought it was pretty cool. So as you can see, conferences are about more than just meeting your friends and having and drinking beer. But there's nothing wrong with drinking beer either. This is actually Linux Day in Lodi. Somewhere in Europe, one presumes. Socializing with people that you work with in free software is very important technically to free software, as well as keeping you involved. It's, you know, drinking beer and eating food together are a great way to start to trust each other. Here's a specific example of how different online and in-person free software is. So this is a famous Flame email from Linus Torvalds. I'll read the really good parts, really bad parts, I'm not sure which. So on mailing lists, people are really mean to each other in free software. They flame each other constantly. So here's Linus Torvalds talking to Rusty Russell. Stop! What madness is this? You have a damn mutex call. Don't introduce mode crap in /dev. Get rid of that stupid, horrible dev futex, which only buys you pain. System administration, extra code, and a black star for being stupid. Yeah. Huh. Weirdly, people just don't seem to enjoy this and don't make much progress on technical problems when this happens. So another thing that happens on mailing lists is developers are constantly butting heads with each other over minor things. So it's really hard to get agreement on a big architectural change when people are constantly competing like deer. So I was really, really afraid to go to my first Linux files or Linux conference in 2002. I was expecting people to be like they are on the mailing list. And instead, the first person I met looked like this. Hi, Valerie, I've always wanted to meet you. It was, yeah, and then we went and had beer. It was great. So yeah, people are way nicer in person. So I have a specific example of how people getting to know each other and being face-to-face helped Linux file systems development. So at the 2010 Linux File Systems Workshop, which had been renamed to the Linux Storage File Systems and Memory Management Summit, I like Linux File Systems Workshop better, this developer named Nick Piggin started talking about a major architectural change that would really improve performance. But it changed file systems and memory management a lot. So when he had talked about it on the mailing list, this was the reaction he got. No, horrible, you will break everything. So when he brought it up very nervous in front of 70 people, every single person in the room, without exception, did this. But on the internet, nobody can see you nod. You're not supposed to send plus one on the mailing list, so all you hear are the people who hate it, and that's all they have to do in life, and they usually don't write code either. So this was another big power-up for Linux file systems. So at this point, I hope I've convinced you that conferences are really important to free software, both technically and socially, and getting people and keeping them involved in free software. So let's talk about who is attending free software conferences. So this is the Linux Kernel Summit in 2010. And if you look carefully, there really aren't very many women in here. In fact, there are maybe three out of about 100 people. There have been several Linux Kernel summits that had zero women at them. So this is a big lack of women in the field of free software in general. It's worst in the kernel, but it's generally about 2% women in free software. That's super bad. So why is this? A lot of people think that, well, computers are genetic. If you're good at computers, you have a gene that makes you understand operating systems or something like that. And more men have it than women, so done. We don't have to do anything differently. I guess only 2% of, there's even fewer women with the free software gene than the computer gene, because there's about 20% women in computing in general, and about 2% women in free software. So if you were to take this to a genetic scientist, they would look at these numbers and say, what? That makes no sense. So it was really hard to get these numbers. The sources varied a lot. It's from different years, but the point is that they're different. So Brazil is about 5 to 10% women in computing overall. Malaysia is, this is women enrolled in computer science undergraduate university programs. Malaysia is about 45%, although they only have like 300 computer science students overall. So the US about 18%, some numbers put that at 12%, and South Africa at 25%. So like, are Brazilian women genetically different from Malaysian women in that they have fewer computer genes? I don't know how that would happen. And here's another graph. This shows the percentage of women in US computer science undergraduate programs. Oh, actually, this is computer degrees awarded to women by year from 1966 to 2010. It starts out at about 15%, goes up to about 35% in 1984, and then it drops back down again to 18% right now. So you show this to a geneticist, and they're going to say, well, human generations take 20 years at least, so how could evolution like this happen so quickly? You would have to like kill billions of people in order to have this much change. So the genetic explanation just doesn't hold up. Anytime you take it to a scientist, they'll tell you, no, that's not what's happening. So what is keeping women out of computing and free software? Well, there are a lot of things, but I'm going to talk mainly about one. This is how women are treated at free software conferences. So I will read this article in a minute. I wrote this article for Linux Weekly News after a friend of mine was groped for the third time in 1 year at a free software conference. I want to define groping specifically. Groping is being touched sexually without your permission. Otherwise, it's called fun. So this is a from my article, and yet here it is, the year 2010, and my female friends and I are still being insulted, harassed, and groped at open source conferences. Some people argue that if women really want to be involved in open source, they will put up with being stalked, leered at, and physically assaulted at conferences. But many of us argue instead, crazy idea, that putting up extra barriers to the participation of women will only harm the open source community. So for this, I interviewed 10 women for this article, and of those 10 women, including myself, 9 of us had been harassed, insulted, or groped at a conference, a free software conference. So this convinced a lot of people that there was a problem. So there's a lot of arguments against stopping groping and sexual comments and things like that. One of them is, it's a compliment, just one that most women don't like, you know. There are lots of ways to compliment women that don't make them go, ew. There's another one which is, but she was flirting with me, she wasn't running away. This is a problem because some people interpret flirting as a woman looking at you in the eyes and smiling. Now I'm flirting with each one of you. Unfortunately, that's exactly what you need to do at a conference when you are talking about free software with somebody. You have to look at them and smile. So this is a problem a lot. If you aren't very good at figuring out who's flirting, then you might be offending women. So another big argument is that it's just our culture. You know, our culture is special. Other cultures maybe are fine, but in our culture, this is what we do. It's and a lot of times this is what I get. You're a prudish American, you know, you Puritan. Why are you imposing your culture on us? I love this photo, by the way. I will not eat my broccoli. But this is actually something that women all over the world say. So the only things I marked on this map are women in free software and free culture that I personally know who have complained about this. So this is, let's see, what do we have? Spain, Ireland, Peru, New Zealand, India, and Brazil as well. I don't know if you remember Linux Chicks Brazil, but they talked about this at least 10 years ago. So this isn't just an American thing or a European thing. It's a Brazilian thing as well. So I want to talk about how this is not theoretical. There's a specific example I have of how groping caused Linux file systems to lose. So remember how important the conferences were to writing a new file system. Chris Mason explicitly credited the 2007 Linux file systems workshop. And this is where this paper was shown. At that same Linux file systems workshop, another file systems developer grabbed my ass. I was talking to him and trying to get away because he was creepy, and reaches over, grabs my butt. I was not flirting with him in any way. It was really creepy. I went and told the other women who were present and warned them about him. But he still goes to every single Linux file systems workshop. He goes to every single kernel summit. And I don't go to any more Linux file systems workshops because of that. Instead, I quit my job in Linux file systems and started the Ada Initiative. So groping, sexual harassment are a Goomba. They come and eat Mario. So I want to give you one more reason why you should care about sexual harassment and assault. So in social justice movements, women are very important. So this is as you know, there's been some unrest, maybe some protests in Brazil over the last month. I was writing this talk and I typed in, you know, freedom of assembly, and got like a message from the UN saying, urging the Brazilian government to allow the protest to go forward. So this is really timely. As you know, this had a big effect on the Brazilian government, and things like $23 billion for public transit before it was zero. So it's really important and it makes a big difference. This is another picture of the protests I picked, and it's hard to tell unless you can get really close, but there were a lot of women in this picture. A lot of them have their faces covered to avoid being identified, but there are dozens of women in this photo. Women are a big part of the protests here in Brazil, and it's about the numbers of people on the street. So, you know, 100,000, we can ignore that. You know, 200,000, getting more important, 1 million people. And so there's a question of, well, what if these women had stayed home because they were worried about getting sexually harassed and assaulted? This isn't theoretical. This is exactly what happens in Egypt, both during the Arab Spring and right now, today, the protests are going on and women are being assaulted and harassed, not just by the police, not just by the Egyptian police, but also by their fellow protesters. The other people in the social justice movement want to keep women out of it. They want to keep 50% of the people out of their social justice movement. Now, it will not be surprising that women's rights are not a priority of the new Egyptian government. And this has a lot to do with women being unable to protest. So this is the consequences of what happens in a social justice movement like Free Software. If you tolerate and allow, or maybe even encourage, sexual harassment and assault of women. So what can we do about it? Obviously, this is bigger than Free Software, but we can change things in Free Software pretty easily. This is the first year that Fizil, or how do you people say it? Some people say Fizil, some say Fizil. This is the first year that this conference has had an anti-harassment policy. So you can go to the website. It's the last item in the first menu. This is, anti-harassment policies are great. They say specifically what kind of behavior isn't welcome at the conference. They say what will happen if you do that behavior. And it says who to talk to if somebody treated you badly. So if anyone does something obnoxious to you, at this conference, go read this policy and you will be able to do something about it. The organizers really care about you having a good time and coming back next year and bringing your friends. So you don't have to run a conference to have an anti-harassment policy. So this is an Argentinian free software group from a previous year at this conference. A small users group or a Python meetup or something like that, you can have an anti-harassment policy too. And even if you have like the world's nicest people who have never insulted anyone, you should still have a policy because as a woman, you often go to these users groups and people are jerks to you or hit on you or just basically make you feel unwelcome. And no one can tell that your group is different unless you tell them. So if you put an anti-harassment policy on your website, you have a better chance of getting more women at your local users group. Another good way to increase women at your conferences is to give out travel scholarships specifically to women. So this is not just about the like two or three women who actually get the travel scholarships. When you advertise these travel scholarships, what you're saying to women is, you're welcome at this conference. We care. We want to make a specific effort and we're willing to spend money. And so dozens more women show up just because you had three travel scholarships. So it's a great thing to do. A lot of people are scared, you know, like, oh, discrimination, oh, patronizing. No, just do the travel scholarships for women. It's a great idea. So another thing to do, I'm not sure how easy this is to see, is to invite women speakers specifically. So there are a lot of social reasons why women don't apply to speak at conferences as much as men. And there's another great deal of social reasons why conference organizers usually think of men when they invite speakers. So you have to make a conscious effort to overcome this bias and invite women speakers. So this year, that's what this conference did. And if you look at the invited speakers page, you'll see it's about half women, about 50% women. This is great. And what they did is they just asked a lot of women and made it a priority. And again, it's not just about the women who actually speak that you have invited. It's about all the other women who see this list of invited speakers and they see women's faces and they say, oh, these women are willing to go to this conference. I will too. It's also important to see leaders in free software who are women up there on stage. It inspires the other women in the audience. So, oh, and I wanted to note about the anti-harassment policy that I'm only here because of the anti-harassment policy. I wouldn't have come if it wasn't here this year. So here's an example of a conference that did all of these things and it worked. So this is PyCon, PyCon US 2013 for the Python community. They had 20% women attendees and speakers. This is huge. Usually 10% is considered a great job for getting women. More often like 2 to 5%. So how did they do it? So let's start with the leadership inside Python. This is Guido van Rossum. He founded the Python project. He has this shirt that says Python is for girls. So it's probably the person who said it was trying to be insulting. Like, hey, oh, only girls use that because it's so easy. Because easy is bad. But Guido saw that and he said, yes, I want Python to be for girls. I want it to be for women. I embrace that. So he wore this shirt at the keynote at PyCon 2013. This shirt is controversial because you can reasonably feel uncomfortable about it. But his intention is to say, I really support women in Python. So here's the list of specific things that PyCon did. So first they had the travel scholarships. PyLadies is the Women in Python group. So they had a PyLadies lunch with dozens of women. I went to it. It was great. It was so fun. There was a benefit auction to raise money for PyLadies. They invited women to speak. They gave free booths to women's groups. They gave free passes to women in addition to the travel scholarships. We gave away 10 passes with the Ada Initiative. It was very cool. A bunch of people went to their first conference. There was this women's office hours, which was a place you could go to hang out with other women and work on your computer. And then we had the Feminist Hacker Lounge, which is this picture here, with Ada Initiative advisor Lee Honeywell teaching people using a card game how to analyze their software for security defects. It's pretty fun. They did it for like 2 hours, and they weren't tired of it by the end. So it was a lot of work, but it totally paid off. There were hundreds of women at PyCon. So the Ada Initiative was a big part of this change at PyCon and at several other conferences. This is my co-founder, Mary. She's Mary Gardner. She lives in Sydney, so we're technically international. So it's actually our jobs to bring more women into free software and culture. This job doesn't pay nearly as well as Linux file systems development did, but it is totally worth it every time a woman comes up to me and says, hey, I got an internship at Code for America, or I wrote my first Python app, or I got a job at the Wikimedia Foundation. It's just great. So here are some of our programs. So the conference anti-harassment policy has been adopted by all of these conferences and many others. These are just the ones that were added to a wiki page we keep. So this is, it's actually harder to go to a free software conference without a policy than it is to go to one with a policy, which is great. I feel much safer at these conferences now. Another thing we do is Ada Camp. It's a new unconference for women in open technology and culture. We just had the third Ada Camp with 200 women in open technology and culture in one room. It was amazing. Did you know there were 200 women? So these are all pictures taken at Ada Camp, not false advertising. Another thing we do is I run the Allies Workshop, which is teaching easy ways for men to fight sexism every day. So like if you see something obnoxious happening on IRC, how should you respond? And also things like as simple as there is a woman at the conference that doesn't know anyone. How should you introduce yourself without being a creep? So there's a bunch of ways that people can make women feel uncomfortable at a conference, and this just teaches you how to do the opposite. So the AIDA Initiative is part of a worldwide movement to diversify free software. These are some of the other organizations that are involved. Debian Women, PyLadies, the GNOME Outreach Program for Women, which is now the Outreach Program for Women. Black Girls Code is very exciting. OpenHatch is trying to make it easy to join free software projects for a lot of different people. So we're part of this, but the AIDA Initiative does something unique. What we do is we do the hard things that nobody else wants to do because they're so controversial and painful and take a lot of work. Nobody wants to come home from writing Linux file systems all day and then read death threats in your email. I mean, nobody wants to read death threats, period, but it's much easier when you only have to do that during work hours. So, and we do this work with the support of the community. These are some of our founding donors. Salomita Garcia is up there. A few other people, Andrea Longo, John Ferlito, the Google Sydney Women's Engineer Group. So you can be part of changing free software and culture. So if there are three things you take away from this talk, they should be this. Conferences are crucial to free software, both technically and in terms of community, recruiting and keeping people in free software. Women and other oppressed groups are less welcome at these conferences. And if we want free software to grow and succeed, we need to make this a priority and change conferences to be more welcoming. But if you can only remember one thing, I want it to be this. Listen. When people tell you what they don't like about the free software community, listen to them and believe them. Probably they're not here just trolling you or lying or trying to make trouble. Probably they're actually really bothered. And in order to listen, you have to stop talking. So before you can hear what other people are saying. So if that's just one thing you do is to stop talking, listen, you might learn something. So thank you so much. I appreciate you coming. And I think we have 10 minutes for questions, or five. OK. All right. I think there's a mic somewhere. There. Oh, no. Any questions? Is the mic? There's a mic. Can you go give it to him? Thanks.
Oh. Hello. Thanks for your inspiring talk. I do not have such a broad overview like you above all the initiatives. I'm a little bit Debian-centric, and you mentioned Debian Women. And last year I made some Google Summer of Code project, which was called Team Matrix. Mm-hmm. And we observed teams in terms of mailing list activity. And if I look at the Debian Women list, you had in the beginning on 2004 and 2005 a lot of talk, and then the talk was decreasing. Is it working? The talk was decreasing. And if I observe other mailing lists where this effect is shown, it was in AMD64 and it's in Debian laptop, it is kind of problem solved. They have no new problems. So in my interpretation, this would be a good sign. I'm not really sure if I'm right. I hope I'm right. But I think the acceptance in Debian is increased for women. It's increased a little bit in number, but I'm not really sure. What's your opinion about it? Perhaps also you have also more insights than me.
We have a Debian women founder in the audience, whom
I
will embarrass.
Pass the mic or?
No, unless... So just a quick summary is that observing that the Debian Women mailing list has very little traffic now. Perhaps that means the problem is solved in Debian.
Well, I think that part of the decrease in traffic had to do with, you know, some of the leaders kind of moving on to do other things. But I did get the sense that the problem was, if not, I mean, it wasn't fully solved, right? It was an experiment to see if we could get more female developers in Debian by doing specific things that basically were not functioning as a female Linux users group, right? We tried to give them development tasks and kind of introduce them to the right people. And a consequence of that, I think, was that within 2 years, so when we started, there were only like one or two female developers, and within 2 years, we had like technically an 800% increase in female developers, like as in people who went through the Debian new maintainer process and became Debian developers, which I think actually that breaks down to something like 10 or 12 new women who became developers within 2 years. So as an experiment, it was successful as a way of, you know, increasing the amount of female developers to be at parity with the male developers. And no, I wouldn't say that that worked. But what happened was we did have a pretty high retention rate for the women who stayed around and became developers. A lot of them are still functioning in like leadership positions or close to within certain smaller groups within Debian. So yeah, I think that it was successful, but specifically in the sense that it demonstrated that there are specific ways you can get women involved that are not just, you know, patting them on the back and just being nice to them. You know, like women like an intellectual challenge just like everyone else. And I think that in that way, yeah, that's part of why it was, I think. But yeah, also, as you say, the men in Debian also just got used to having women around. And the ones who didn't like it, you know, it didn't really matter that they thought Debian women was stupid. They couldn't get rid of us. So, yeah, so that's my opinion on what happened there.
So definitely a trend that's occurred with the women in free software groups, the various different ones, is that participation has fallen off in all of them, in part because we have newer, broader projects. Things like OpenHatch does what Debian Women was aiming to bring new developers in. OpenHatch does that for all open source projects now. So you can't judge the progress by an individual mailing list, the traffic on it. Other questions? The mic? Oh, there you go, great. It, just wait for a minute, it takes a while. Just turn it on, wait. Hello. Yep, there you go.
Well, there are some experiments in Brazil and I think also in the US that prove that there are some very serious issues in the education system, like some kind of attitude from teachers who say, well, you're not that good in mathematics, it's okay, women are, you know, it's not for girls, this kind of thing. So do you have any kind of project or any kind of, I don't know, ideas to work with teachers, male and female teachers in engineering or computers, you know, to try to create some awareness of this attitude that sometimes happens without noticing or even fight it in a more openly way, I mean, in undergraduate school, I mean.
So this is a very important problem of all of these subtle or not so subtle messages to women that you're doing the wrong thing, you don't belong here in computer science. The Ada Initiative, we decided to focus on free software and free culture and women after university because there are so many groups already doing research and starting programs. There's a great book called Unlocking the Clubhouse that talks about how Carnegie Mellon University increased the percentage of women in their computer science program to 42%. So that's a good way of a good resource for people looking to change professors in college. Another good example is Harvey Mudd College, under the leadership of Maria Clave, managed to increase enrollment, female enrollment in computer science a great deal by just some changes to the curriculum. So there's some work out there. It's not what we're doing, but it's important work. I think there's a question down here.
Hello. I'm part of the Drupal community, and we had some good experience in terms of bringing more women to the conference. And one of our strategies was to, it's not only about gender diversity, but also topic diversity. And Drupal, being a web framework, we can bring not only programmers, but also journalists, content editors, marketing people, and also how technology and education work together, nonprofits. And I believe that's one of the key ways to bring women to a conference, to software conference. It's much more than just software. It's if we make it more diverse, the topics, women will come, and this will create a cross-pollination between
yes, I understand what you're saying.
They understand only the part, for example, of web design. They'll pick up and get some interest in programming, and this will create a cycle, you know. I think that's one of the strategies that has worked in Drupal community. So.
Yes, so the basic idea is if you expand your community and welcome people who are not just really intense internal programmers, then you will have a broader variety of people, and that will include more women. So this is an interesting line to walk. The idea that, okay, we will increase women in free software by getting women who are not in areas of programming is both good and bad. It's good because we should be respectful and welcoming of people in all roles if we want free software to be a success. If we only respect people who write code, we're going to have really bad software and nobody will use it. So it's important to welcome all people. But we also need to not send the message that women are only welcome in non-programming roles. We want women in all roles. And often, yes, if you get involved through another route, you will begin to program, and that's a common story. But you have to be careful how you say it or promote it, because you'll just make things worse if you're not careful. So, any other questions? We only have like 5 minutes left, so. Okay, thank you so much. I really appreciate you coming. Oh, wait. Oh, sorry. You get to applaud twice. Awesome. If you could do a standing ovation at the end, that would be great too. Okay.
Well, I'm not really from the coding environment. I'm a physician here in Brazil, and I have some data you can probably use. And in Brazil right now, about 51 to 52% of entries in medicine are females. And it's kind of funny that these women are yet underpaid and undervalued, you know, all in every senior position. We don't have women here in Brazil. And it's kind of the development country type of thing.
And oh, it's not just Brazil.
Yes, but what I have to say is this. In Russia, 70% of medicine is done by females now. And in Russia, medicine isn't first choice anymore, because it's a woman's profession. So here in Brazil, we still have some, well.
What's your question?
Some people still think that medicine is of some value. And my question is, what do you think about this when we transform this into a female work ethic? Where do we go from there?
Okay. Yes. So the question is basically, often when a field becomes majority women, it becomes lower status. And this has happened in nursing, in medicine. It's in progress in medicine all over the world, and other places as well. This is why we have to, at the same time, not just bring more women into the field, but also raise the status of women while we're doing it. So we need to be feminists as well as pragmatic. The important thing that I think makes free software so important and free culture is that this is affecting the entire world. So many people are on the internet, and our culture is what they are learning. So it's an extremely powerful place to change culture if you fill it up with women. So if we lead the way as social justice activists to show that women should be respected and treated well, we can actually change the world. That's why I quit my job as a Linux file systems developer and co-founded a nonprofit, which I do not recommend doing. It's really hard. So thank you very, very much. I appreciate it. I'll talk to you later.